When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. I hope you are ready to take a trip into the clandestine and murky world of doping. This is the show we promised you, so snuggle up, get comfy, whatever works best for you. Some call it performance enhancement, others simply call it cheating.
And some call it a waste of doing drugs because, well, there's only one reason to really do them. So if you're an elite athlete and you took that decongestant by mistake, or maybe you made a grab for that unaccredited food supplement, chances are that in the eyes of the WADA, you broke the rules and you're just a drug cheat. So what does it do? And how does it do it? And how do you get away with it, most importantly?
And if you're a bad guy, you'll want to hear about that. Right, in Neil deGrasse Tyson's interview with Lance Armstrong, the two got to grips with doping in cycling as well as other sports and just how much of a boost your performance can get when you dope, and then go on to debate whether the future will be clean. And I assure you, you are going to want to hear what Lance Armstrong says about that one.
Yeah, and bringing us their extensive expertise are the publisher of Skeptic Magazine and the author of The Moral Arc, Michael Shermer, clinical psychologist at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, Dr. Tom Hildebrand, and medical ethicist and author of The Ethics of Sports, Dr. Arthur Kaplan.
Yeah, that's bases covered there. Yeah. Busy show. So start the clock. See if we break any records. And if we do, it'll be sample time. But don't worry, Chuck. We'll flip a coin for it.
Oh, no, don't worry. I'm having somebody else pee in a cup for me.
Okay, that's that covered. Right. So we know people dope.
Yes.
We know athletes are dope. We go back to ancient Greece and know that they chewed on animals' testicles to get testosterone. And if you did that now, you're banned.
Sexy.
Isn't it just? Mm. So now we're just getting to this point where people have been outraged, but it's been going on for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're coming to terms with the fact that maybe one in 30 get caught.
Right.
Now, that's a real discrepancy between the World Anti-Doping Agency, the athletes, their entourages, the teams, state-sponsored doping, mm-hmm. whatever the stages are there. But they're always playing catch-up.
Yeah.
It always seems to be a real problem. So we're going to try and find out how we shorten the gap, if we can shorten
If we can
gap.
Shorten the gap. And, you know, these are all questions that that we'll discuss and explore during the show. Is can we shorten the gap? Is it cheating? Why shouldn't we just allow guys to do it? I mean, I certainly have questions that I want answered during this show because
I feel a little differently. Let the world, let it go.
Hey, man.
Do what you want.
Hey, look, it's an arms race, okay? according to our latest president who said about nuclear arms, let it be an arms race, you know? And I kind of feel like I have a saying. Mm. I want my rock stars high and I want my home run hitters on steroids. So, I mean, listen.
But there's the other side of the equation where people say, no, I want my athletes clean.
Pure.
The TV want this to be that way. Yeah. And let's see.
Yeah, you feel that
way. Two horses pulling in opposite directions.
And here's the way I feel. You feel that way until you go back to watching baseball like it was in like 1960, whatever. And like, you know, guys hit home runs like every other day. Okay. We don't, you know, people say they want it, but you want the excitement. And that excitement comes at a cost. And for me, that cost is doping.
Such an enhancement in training methods.
True.
Understanding.
True.
The appliance of medical science legitimately
okay.
to an athlete. So we're able to do specific things to improve performance in the biomechanics without introducing any chemical advantage. So we are going to see a progression. What we're not going to see is off the chart immediate breaking records and results. So it's a case of, are you patient enough to see the evolution of athletes?
Hey, listen, that is a great point you're making there. And I can't say that I'm not in agreement with that. So you know what? Speaking of agreement, disagreement, why don't we get into this show? Now it's time to bring in our first guest, Michael Shermer, publisher of Skeptic Magazine and Scientific American columnist who wrote a column titled The Doping Dilemma, author of The Moral Arc, How Science Makes Us Better People, and most importantly, a prolific cyclist himself. Please welcome to the show, Michael Shermer. Michael, how are you?
Hello, everybody. I'm doing well. Thank you.
All right. Before we get into the controversy surrounding Lance Armstrong, let's first listen to a clip where our own Neil deGrasse Tyson sat down with Lance himself.
How much would you say your performance was enhanced as a percent of yourself? From when you were at your peak response to these right. chemicals?
Well, so these, and I've talked about this in the past, so that generation, the problem was in cycling, you always had some of that. And you had, and I break it up into two categories, low octane and high octane. And you've always had, and maybe still have, some low octane. So these 1-2 percenters. And then came
low octane enhancements.
Yeah. So whatever.
1-2%, if you're world class and you just have to beat the one person, that'll do it.
Right. But assuming that everybody opts in for low octane, mm-hmm. right, which they did in the old days. But then what happened is somebody came along, Big Pharma, right, came along with something that was high octane. And that was EPO. And that was not 1 or 2%. That was 10%. And so it was so great.
EPO.
Erythropoietin, so okay. the red cell booster, which, you know, again, power, weight, oxygen, right? How you get that power is...
Is this what they call the Edgar Allan Poe?
The nickname we gave it back
then.
So you had this, the sport, not even cycling, but the entire endurance world, whether it's running or cycling, whatever, anything that's a multi-hour event, I mean, you could argue a lot of it, they discovered it. And it was so beneficial to the ones that made that, it spread like wildfire. And then everybody's faced with this this quandary, like, oh my God, like what? 1 or 2%, you can almost manage that. You could say, you know what, I'm not gonna do that, and I can still compete. 10%? Then you're faced with the decision, do I opt in or do I go home?
This is a lot to unpack there, Michael. And before we let you respond to that, first of all, let's give a little bit of cred to why you are deemed able to speak about this. You were starting in 1979 a cyclist. You made the jump to cycling, and you became a professional rider, right?
Yeah, in the 1980s, I competed in long-distance cycling. So I was one of the co-founders of the 3,000-mile nonstop transcontinental bicycle race called Race Across America, or RAM for short. And I did that 5 times, rode across the country 5 times, and I was race director for 15 years. So I went across America 20 times total by bike or car. So I know the sport inside and out. In the middle 80s, I knew all the Olympic cyclists. And this is back when blood doping, where you pack in your own blood, blood that you took out earlier was legal. It wasn't even banned, and everybody was doing it. I didn't do it for various reasons, but I knew a lot of people that did. And it was right when doping was becoming much more effective as a tool for performance enhancement, and therefore the rules then began to be designed by the governing bodies of what should be allowed and not allowed. And that's really when the whole doping thing became an issue. As Lance noted, you know, the doping had been part of the sport for all the way back to the early 20th century, for sure. But it wasn't a thing that anyone really cared about. I mean, it was just knowing everybody did it, you had to do it. It wasn't until the 80s and 90s that it became a thing to regulate. And that's when it became a moral issue.
So now let's talk about this, because I'm not sure if it's because of the controversy that surrounds Lance. I'm not sure if he was equivocating or if this is exactly the case the way he broke it down. Can you unpack that for us and give us a sense of what he is talking about?
Yeah, what he's talking about there is for endurance athletes, in particular like cyclists, the best thing you can have for performance enhancement is delivering oxygen to your muscles. Yep. So when he talked about power, weight, and then oxygen, he's talking about once you've trained up to your maximum performance output, say watts per minute that you can push up a hill, the only thing you could do to change your performance is to reduce your weight, so you're pushing less weight up the hill, and deliver more oxygen to the muscles, which is what EPO does. So EPO is a genetically modified form of erythropoietin, which is naturally in your body.
Yes.
That stimulates the production of red blood cells. So people that are anemic, they take this. We think probably around 91, 92 or so, the Amgen-produced drug erythropoietin, or EPO, was introduced into the professional peloton. So once you get wind that somebody is or may be doing this and that it may make a big difference, then it becomes a rational choice to do it because you have to do it. And when Lance is talking about 1%, well, what he meant was maybe I don't want to do the 1% performance enhancements, I could just train a little bit harder. You might get away with that. But something like EPO, the reason it was a game changer was because it was probably between 7 and 10% performance difference. And that you can't.
So what you're saying is once you get to a certain, I don't know, let's call it dew point or equilibrium, there's no way that you can reproduce those results yourself naturally.
That's right.
Gotcha.
So doping was part of cycling for decades, but the drugs they were doing probably didn't make that big a difference.
You know,
maybe blocking pain or just stimulants so you could keep going, but it didn't make any difference on you know what you were actually doing on the bike. It was more off the bike recovery kind of stuff. What EPO did, and then also blood doping. I mean, blood doping is the same thing. You take your blood out. Say early in the season, you put it back in when you need it. You're just putting more red blood cells, which is what EPO does.
But it's your own blood, is what you're talking about,
always.
Right?
Always.
Yes, it's your own blood, right? But it's a little risky because it involves needles and storing blood for long periods of time. Blood cells automatically start dying the moment you take them out of your body.
Okay.
So you got to preserve them and keep them fresh in a refrigerator somewhere, freezer maybe for a while, and then deliver it back into your body. So you got to be agile with needles. And imagine these guys in hotel rooms, the bag of blood on the hook on the wall where they took the picture off. I mean, it's just insane. And it gets contaminated. So there are risks.
What other ways will a cyclist try and enhance their performance? EPO. It's pointless getting the weight because that's destroying the whole equation. So where else do they go?
Really, that was the game changer, the EPO. And then once there was a test for EPO, so they shifted to just back to blood doping, which is the older technology. What are they doing now? I don't know, because the drug takers are always about 5 years ahead of the drug testers. And it will always be like that. And the biggest controversy now are these therapeutic use exemptions, TUEs, in which you get exemption from the racing organization that it's okay to take this particular drug because you have asthma or allergy. So the one that came out this year was thanks to the Russian hackers, the Fancy Bear hackers, in retaliation for the hacking and release of their drug use. So it's a little bit of an arms race internationally. internationally. It turned out that a lot of the top riders were using these cortisone, taking cortisone shots under the pretense that they had allergies or asthma. And funny, they all got allergies and asthma just before the Tour de France.
Yeah, of course.
Michael, you're such a cynic.
Well,
you know, if we analyze it from the way I look at it is from a scientist's perspective is from a game theory. Like, think of this as a rational choice these guys are making. Don't think of it as a moral choice, although it is. The question is, why do they do it?
Right.
So instead of condemning them as sinners, let's just try to analyze the game matrix to make the incentives higher to not dope than to dope. And that's the hard part. Because the moment you think somebody is doing something that might make a difference, even if they're not, mm-hmm. just thinking, then the pressure is on you to do it also. Because as Lance said, you know, it gets to a point where you either do it or you pack up and go home. You can't be a bicyclist. And, you know, so that's what makes it such a dilemma for a lot of these guys. A lot of them are uneducated, poor. They didn't go to college. They started racing when they were young. They don't have life options to, you know, okay, I'm not going to dope, so I'm going to go back and be a, you know, work on Wall Street. No, it's not like that.
Michael, stay with us. We're going to go to our next clip. Interesting one, this one, because it addresses the fact that does Lance believe he actually won 7 Tour de France's? Let's have a listen.
If everyone does it, this is a very big, I don't know who did it, but that's not the point of my question.
Right.
If everyone does it, including you, and you still win, aren't you still better than everybody else?
Well,
because I could take it and I'm not going to win the Tour de France.
Right.
So the person still matters.
Right. The person still matters. The there's a bunch of arguments here. Okay. There's first of all, I'm the wrong person to, it would be like me asking you, "Hey Neil, how was your lecture last week? Was it good?" And you would say, "Well, I think it went pretty good, but you should probably ask the 2000 the students or the people that were there. Ask them." So we can't answer that, right? I mean, I would say, look, ask my peers, ask my rivals. You could argue that certain substances are more beneficial to certain people and less beneficial to others. So that starts to cloud the picture. But then you just don't know what all ever. I mean, it was the wild, wild west back then. You didn't have testing. You didn't have these guys were. It was crazy. And so it just all gets murky. Where I go to on that is, if you ask me, do you think you won the Tour de France 7 times? I say yes. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I think I believe in my heart and soul that my rivals and my peers would support that.
Okay, wow, simple, Michael.
That's a bit. Michael, what do you think?
Agree with Lance that he won 7 Tour de France's.
And seriously, and it's not even a glib question because you're a cyclist, man, and you're really into this. You know exactly what it takes to do this kind of endurance sport. And so speaking from, the truest sense of a cycling, an athlete cyclist, is he right? Did he win 7 Tour de France?
Yeah, I think he's right. If you asked, say, his key rival throughout those years, Jan Ulrich, the great German cyclist, who did win the Tour, won the Olympic gold medal, was busted for doping. If you asked him, I'm sure he would say, "Yeah, Lance really did beat me fair and square," because he was doping too. And in fact, if you look at the podium finishers, the second and third place finishers of every one of Lance's 7 tours, they all were busted for doping. So we know for sure. I can't say all 100% of every tour rider doped. I can't say that. We don't know that for sure. But absolutely, virtually all of them, or almost all of them, or nearly, whatever adjective you want to use. Certainly all the top ones. So
wow. Okay.
Does that mean the playing field is perfectly level? Because the doping is not a perfect art. It's a science that has some flexibility. So maybe, you know, one of the things that Lance did that was different from the previous doping programs was he hired the best doctor, this Michele Ferrari, the best doping doctor there was, to work exclusively for the postal team and not for other athletes. So the other athletes had to go to other doctors. Now, Tyler Hamilton talks about this in his book, The Secret Race. He hired this other guy who wasn't so good. And this is how he busted. And this guy didn't have the same kind of sophisticated program that this Michele Ferrari guy did. So it's so the problem is we'll never know for sure because it, you know, can't rerun the experiment, and where no one dopes, and we see if Lance wins anyway. My guess is he probably would, and because again, it's a one trial experiment, and the other guys he beat were doping, and they were probably, you know, the German team that Jan Ulrich was on was pretty sophisticated, so their doping program was probably pretty good, probably the same as Lance's. So
wow, that's big news, man, for me. I mean, seriously, you've really changed the way I think about the entire situation. I mean, with what you just said, I have a completely different mindset on the whole situation.
Okay, so if everybody on road racing was doping, how do you feel if you're the guy that always came last?
If I'm
here's the other aspect of it. Yeah, the things we don't know, like the guys that didn't dope. And they didn't win. We don't know what could have happened. We only know what did happen. And
right.
So, I talked to that article I wrote for Scientific American. I interviewed quite a few cyclists, including one of Lance's teammates, is Frankie Andreo, who was never going to win the Tour. He was there as a domestique. He was there to help his team leader, in this case, Lance. And what he told me was he didn't want to dope, but he had to do it just to do his job. That he was getting dropped on gradual hills by guys who used to not be able to even stay on his wheel. Everybody was dropping him, so he had to do it just to stay in the race,
to keep up.
Stay with us. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll dive even deeper into the murky world of performance enhancement with Neil deGrasse Tyson's interview with that man himself, Lance Armstrong, and of course Michael Shermer. Don't go away. We'll be back with Playing with Science very shortly.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limit. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops Driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code STARTALK at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code STARTALK for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code STARTALK.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
Isn't he just?
Yes.
And this is Playing With Science. And today, we are diving deep into the murky terrain of performance enhancements, a.k.a. doping. You might call it cheating. Whichever way you look at it, we are shedding the light on it. And with us via video call, we have Michael Shermer, publisher of Skeptic Magazine and columnist for Scientific American.
And a man who has changed my entire perspective. Yeah. Of the Tour de France in every single way. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Cyclists on rocket fuel.
So I guess we should take a listen to another clip,
yeah,
right,
let's
Gary?
Do that. Neil deGrasse Tyson interviewing Lance Armstrong, and they get stuck into the debate regarding public demand for records. Let's take a listen.
Can you imagine a future where records level off and then the public sentiment changes, mm-hmm. and we say, we want you to chemically enhance so that we can see records broken, because that's what brings people
right.
to the sport.
And I get that question a lot.
And is that different from sumo wrestlers right. who, so they're not lab chemically changed, right. but they're dietarily changed. Right. So a sumo wrestler doesn't look like anybody else right. and they have shorter life expectancies. Yeah. It affects their health.
Yeah. Or a bodybuilder.
Or bodybuilders. Yeah. There's a whole other thing going on there and we pay to see that. Faster, right. higher, stronger.
Again, I get this question a lot, but again, I'll say, I mean, I'm probably the worst person in the world to try to answer this. I have the least credibility of almost anybody when it comes to this. I don't like that idea. I think that it even is remarkably ineffective, and it's a fact, remarkably ineffective that the anti-doping agencies are, you know, for spending tens and twenties of millions of dollars to catch, you know, less than 1% of the population. You know that's not right. You know that somehow they're missing some. So people see that and say, well, if they're so ineffective, why don't we just legalize it? Mm-hmm. And that's where I sit here as a father or as a friend. And I say, well, I don't know. My son plays football, and he's a great football player. And my little guy is going to, who knows what he's going to grow up to do. And I don't want him playing in that sport or playing in that system. So I see it all. If you ask, if I got to vote, I'd say no. Let's not do that.
Even if the public kind of wants it, I mean, we want to see records broken. It could. I'm just saying. I'm just right. wondering. I'm imagining a future right. where an entire Olympics goes by and not a single world record is set.
I think your average NFL fan doesn't care what those mm-hmm. athletes. I mean, look, big, fast, strong,
right,
aggressive. They don't. They want their team to win. Somehow, that average NFL fan that thinks that way about the Dallas Cowboys or the Pittsburgh Steelers, when it came to looking at me and the Twitter, it changed their view of that. Mm-hmm. But when they go back to watching football, they have the same view they have.
Right.
So it's just different.
Inexplicably.
I can't explain it. You're the smart one. Maybe you
no.
can.
I'm going to explain it. And with all due respect to Lance Armstrong.
Go on.
None of my NFL guys, who I know for a fact are juicing, okay? If you ask them about juicing, they go, hey, man, you know, that's not really something I want to get into. And then that's the end of it. That is all they do. Mm-hmm. You will never find an NFL player talking about juicing. Never, okay? Because they know they're all doing it. It's an unspoken, accepted thing. And they're like, don't get into that. Whereas Lance Armstrong stood America down eye to eye and said, no way. No, dude, are you kidding me? I'm carrying the American flag. I'm over there in France. I'm representing this country. I'm clean, baby. I'm a good guy. I'm Dudley Do-Right. I'm Captain America. Well, F you, buddy, because you lied.
Okay.
I'm
okay.
sorry. Oh,
no,
wait
no,
a minute.
No.
I did not mean to get into all that. That is not my place here. I'm sorry.
No. So it's more offensive for you that he lied to his country rather than performance enhanced?
Absolutely, because what he said is right. And I don't know, Michael, maybe you can tell me about this because you're a guy who writes about this stuff. So maybe you could tell me about my own psychology here. But what he said is right. I am a huge NFL fan. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge NFL fan. And when I see these guys dish out the punishment they dish out on Sunday, and then I see them right back at practice on Wednesday, I know the only way they can do that is if they're sticking a needle in their butt or they're using some type of recovery drug. I know that in the back of my mind. I don't care, because come Sunday, I want to see the best wide receiver in the league out there catching an 80-yard bomb from my quarterback. So, you know, talk about that, man.
Right, Michael, are you surprised at Lance's stance from that interview?
Yeah, actually, I am. He's being pretty forthright and I think showing a lot more integrity now. Let me just comment on that. I think he has served his time, his punishment. His punishment has been worse than for anybody else. And I think the reason for that is because of his own personality, his temperament, the way he handled it, the line, not just the line. It was the destroying of people's lives and careers. Mm-hmm. The things he did, say, to Greg LeMond, who's a super good guy, and, you know, to other people he sued, to reporters and so on. The other guys I mentioned, like Jan Ulrich and the other dopers, they just served their time and kept their mouth shut like your NFL friend. You know, it's like, yeah. But first, they all lied initially. But, you know, then they just shut up and go away and go back to work. And, you know, Lance didn't do that. I think he's served his time. I mean, we have in America really two kinds of justice systems. There's retributive justice, where we want retribution. We want to punish the sinner for their bad deeds. Mm-hmm. Then restorative justice, which is not a big thing in America. It's a bigger thing in Europe now.
Right.
Where you want to restore the damage that was done. Now, so what brought Lance down was not the doping. They were doping before. They're still doping. They doped during Lance's time. You know, that's not it. What is it was the way it was handled, the line, and destroying people's lives. So restitution, how we can restore that justice. Well, you know, he needs to make amends with the people he hurt, really, right, and also help the sport clean up. If that's what, you know, if he believes that and the sport still wants to do that, as opposed to legalizing it all, which I don't think will ever happen. That's really what he needs to do. That's hard to do. It's hard to call people up and go, you know what, I'm sorry I did what I did. It's hard for any of us to do that.
Okay.
You know, but he's making, you know, he has this Forward podcast. He wants to get back into public life. You know, the guy could be governor of Texas. I mean, there's so much he could do, but he's got to restore the damage done. And the retribution, I think, has been done. You know, there's people who want to punish him more. Forget it. Come on, it's been done.
Right. I'm with you on that.
Let's go to our last clip and take a listen to the last one of Neil's little questions with Lance himself.
It reminds me of this skit on Saturday Night Live back in the 80s where they were making fun of all of the, you know, the doping. And they said, we're going to have a new event, a weightlifting, where all drugs are allowed, all enhancements are allowed. Yeah. And so they get like one of these Hans and Franz type guys, and he goes up and he goes to pick up the weight. And the weight is too heavy, but his grip is so strong that he pulls his arms off. He said, he pulled his arms off. There's blood splurting out of his shoulders.
That's great on Saturday. That's just never going to happen. By the way, too, the pressure that it won't happen because the ultimate governing body, right, the International Olympic Committee, you know, all the individual sports committees, the media, the sponsors, they don't want that. So they will put enough pressure on that will never happen.
Mm-hmm. But it makes a good skit.
It was a great skit.
There's another thing we've learned. Neil's a big fan of Saturday Night Live.
There you go.
Okay. Is Lance right there? I mean, yes, tremendous athlete. We know he did some wrong things 7 times or more. But with his understanding of the holistic picture of sport and in particular cycling, is he right to say, you know what, people aren't going to stand for it? The TV want role models. They want guys to look up to. They want the clean, pure image of sporting heroes and heroines. Is he right? TV and the public won't stand for it, and we're going to see something like he envisaged in the future?
Yeah, no, the drugs don't make that much of a difference. So you rip your legs off when you're cycling.
I hope not.
No, and so I should add parenthetically to this that, you know, these athletes are just phenomenal. Without any drugs at all, they are freaks of nature. I mean, they are six standard deviations out on the genetic bell curve of performance without any drugs. I mean, right. And even Lance's teammates that have spoken, like Tyler Hamilton in his book, you know, he said Lance is just a kick-ass, hardcore, great athlete just by nature without doing anything. He was, and not just genetically, but also training him. That's a huge part of it. It takes an unbelievable amount of discipline to get out there. And cycling's hard, really hard. You know, you're out there in the weather. You know, most of the year it's cold and miserable in Europe. I mean, these guys are hard men. They are really tough without the drugs. And so the drugs don't make that much of a difference. It's not that huge. They're still great athletes, and they should be admired for that.
We're up against a break, and we got to wrap things up. But could you, just from your perspective as a cyclist, as a man of science, and as someone who is intimately acquainted with this subject, could you kind of just put a button on this for us? Where do you see this going, and what do you think really needs to be done so that this can be, I won't say remedied, but managed in a far better way?
Yeah. Well, probably the drug testers need more sophisticated tests to keep up with the drug takers. Mm. But more importantly, the sport itself, I think, needs to reconfigure the incentives and make the consequences of doping such that the cyclists don't want to do it. And also the biological passport, so to speak. You have sort of a profile of where you begin of all your measures. And we know that training can only bump you up to here. And then if all of a sudden within 6 months you're up here, then we know, okay. So more of that out of competition testing, those sorts of things, biological passports early on in somebody's career. We know where you stand genetically. Here's what you can do by training. Those kinds of things. More of that is the only thing. Short of just legalizing everything, but I don't think that's a good idea because we don't know the consequences of the drugs. But I also worry about the evolutionary arms race trickling down into the lower ranks of kids. Mm. You know, the junior ranks, pretty soon high school kids, junior high school kids, because they think, well, if I'm going to get to, it's like the people that want to go to Harvard and they send their kids to Harvard and they start them in kindergarten at some private school. It's like, oh, come on.
Right.
You know, so you get that, you know, I got to start right away early. And so I would worry about drugs being used by teenagers and kids.
Absolutely.
Wow. Hey, man, this is just super, super great stuff, yeah. Michael. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us, man. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, Michael, thank you so much. We must get you back on the show sometime soon. So we'll take that break now. And thank you to Michael Shermer, publisher of Skeptic Magazine. Please make sure you go and check that out too. Up next, we'll hear from both Dr. Tom Hildebrand and Dr. Arthur Kaplan. Dr. Kaplan is a professor at NYU of medical ethics and author of The Ethics of Sport, while Tom Hildebrand is clinical psychologist at Mount Sinai Hospital, and we'll get both their views on doping in sport. This is Playing with Science. Do not go away.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S.
Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And StarTalk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I am Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. And today we are exploring the murky world of doping. Yes, we've heard from Michael Shermer, we've heard from Lance Armstrong and Neil deGrasse Tyson. And so far, we've mostly considered the effects doping has on the sport and sports itself. But now let's take a closer look at what the negative effects it has on athletes' body, athletes' brain. And to do that, let's bring in Dr. Tom Hildebrandt. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hey, we are good. Just so as people know, you're a clinical psychologist at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City.
Yes.
With direct studies on the psychiatric, behavioral, and physical consequences of using performance-enhancing drugs. Imagine I'm on the Lance Armstrong team doing a Tour de France, one of the seven that he's won. I could possibly on EPO. I could be blood doping. I'll then be taking steroids, most likely for recovery, because I've got 21 days out of 23 that I am going to be hitting the road. Then I'll be taking masking agents, so as I pass that sample test.
Right.
I'm a pharmacy on wheels. Really going uphill and downhill. What on earth is happening to me in a molecular sense? And then what is going off in my head?
Good.
Well, I think what you do is you strip your brain's natural ability to adapt to those situations. By manipulating it pharmacologically, you take the normal ups and downs and swings and adaptability out of it. You provide this sort of constant, either high dose or during withdrawal, low dose, right? So it takes time for your system to catch back up and re-regulate itself. So either too high or too low, you end up in situations where you act outside of your normal behavior.
Hey, can you do me a favor? And sure. Because what Gary just explained sounds absolutely frightening. I never really thought of it that way. So take us through that, each, what the body and the brain is going through with each one. So we know about the oxygen to the bloodstream, that we discussed already with Michael Shermer. So then you want to talk about adding on top of that the steroids for recovery. What does that do to you?
Synthetic androgens, as they hit the brain, they occupy the primary receptors that male hormones work on.
Right.
And depending on your baseline development, you're either more or less sensitive to those signals. If you think of what androgens do, they kind of motivate people to act externally in the world. So they can provide energy, confidence. They make you feel really strong and impervious to pain. They also start to change the signaling in the opiate system. So part of that confidence or invincibility really comes from a true kind of knockout of pain signals that are coming up through the central nervous system. So what you have is a kind of a perfect storm of competitiveness. You have increased muscle strength and power, and you have a brain that's primed to feel less pain and act more aggressively outwardly on the world. Now take that away. When you take sort of that unnatural stimulation away, all the natural ability to sort of maintain those behaviors and that action fall with those reduced levels of male hormone.
Okay, so Tom, all right, so we've decided we're building the perfect beast here in terms of bringing these factors together. If you then say, well, some athletes have different sensitivities to certain things you put in their system in terms of doping, and then how does that affect them going on through their competition and recovery? Then, once they finish, the long-term effects to their body, to their brain, to their personalities. If you could sort of open that up for us, please.
Sure. So I think thinking about the sensitivity, there are probably some genes that are involved in it, but maybe even more potently, there's a sensitive window during adolescence where exposure to these substances likely puts you on a different trajectory. Your brain is being organized by hormones during that time. And if you amplify the synthetic androgen effect during that time, you set people on a completely different trajectory. And they become more aggressive, more likely to want to seek pleasure and act externally in the world in that way. In terms of the long-term effects, we're really looking to see just the beginning of the data that are coming out about this. And probably the most dangerous part of it are those withdrawal periods. If you have periods of time where you've cycled on the drug and then cycled off, and you've gone into a low testosterone state, mm-hmm. you essentially age the brain more quickly. So you sort of the data look more and more like kind of a dementia-like syndrome that happens in the brain that comes from likely low periods of low testosterone or low hormone levels in the brain.
That serious?
Yeah.
Is that serious from your research? You've been able to discover that it could.
Yes.
With that in mind, and I'm only asking as a devil's advocate here. Sure. And by that, I mean, I'm the devil. I believe that perhaps, and I've gone on record with this, and there are a lot of arguments against it that I accept willingly. But why isn't there a push to find a way to make these agents safe, healthy, and be able to be utilized in a healthy way? I am not talking about in children. The developing brain is a minefield of uncertainty. You just can never know. I'm talking about for a professional athlete, why can't we find a way to make this safe and regulate it and say, here are the acceptable parameters in which you're able to use these agents?
Well, I think there are two reasons why that hasn't happened. Okay. One, is because it's associated with cheating.
Okay.
Right. So that initially will eliminate any of the kind of scientific investigation into that very question.
Gotcha.
Because if you try to answer, can this be safe, but safe for people who use it already to cheat to begin with, no one's going to fund that. No one's going to support that kind of research, even if it's a good idea.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's as succinctly as you have put that, that is the best answer that could be given. Hey, listen, you know, we got to wrap it up. Do me a favor, just before we let you go, give me the one punctuated statement to keep me from sticking this needle in my butt when this show is over. Because I got to tell you,
you want to break a record?
As far as I can tell, I'm ready to break some records.
Doctor, let's stop him.
Sure. Ask yourself if it's worth having early dementia in your 50s and cardiac problems so that all of that that muscle that you're carrying around, you have a weak heart and a failing brain to carry it with you.
All right. You know what? You've done your job because I already have a weak heart and a failing brain. So I certainly don't need to make that.
Well, let's not put it on the express train.
Exactly. We don't have to exacerbate that situation. Hey, Tom, thanks so much, man. Great to have you on the show.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Anytime.
I have to tell you that I started off, and we all know my position has been, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just want to see home runs hit. I want to see the fastest football player on the field. I got to admit, slowly, I'm kind of changing my mind about this. I don't know.
From one doctor to another, say goodbye to Dr. Tom Hildebrand and thank you very much. And say hello to Dr. Arthur Kaplan, Professor of Bioethics at NYU, Director of Medical Ethics Division, author of The Ethics of Sport, and a man who I think, Chuck, is going to open your eyes even wider.
Okay, let's see. Hey, Dr. Kaplan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Kaplan, for joining us. Before we get into anything, here's what I need to know. From an ethical standpoint, why is doping wrong? Okay? And listen, the reason why I'm asking this, to be honest, is because I don't care. I don't care if my athlete is doped up, okay? I don't I want my rock stars high on drugs, and I want my home run hitters juiced up on steroids. I don't care.
I do.
Doping and steroids and a lot of other performance enhancement things are dangerous for athletes. And you might say, hey, they make their choices, they take the risks, but kids do what athletes do. Sports people do what athletes do. It doesn't take too long for all that stuff to hit the high school weight room or even the elementary school training program. So if the stars do it, people they admire do it, they'll do it. And the earlier you do it, the worse the side effects. Second, it's just not fair. So if you like sports and you like all your home run hitters doped up and half of them aren't, they can't compete, you know, against the rest. So either everybody's got to do it and you're sort of coercing the people who don't want to do it into saying, I got to do it because how am I going to compete against people who are on drugs or who have other advantages? So one of it is danger, not just to the athlete, but to, you know, the people they look up, the people that look up to them. The other is basically a kind of coercion that once you take doping in, everybody's got to do it whether they like it or they don't like it.
Is there a simple one-stop shop that will cut all of it out?
I don't think so. And in fact, it may get worse for a science reason that's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. A lot of the doping now is drugs, maybe moving things like red blood cells, you know, building them up in your body. But the future is genetic engineering.
Yes.
Jerry. I was on the Olympic committee that met a couple years ago on gene engineering in athletes, just trying to look forward. The problem is if I start to tweak my genes, there are various ways to do it. Doesn't matter how, but I can. They'll make more chemicals. They'll make more substances. And it's all my stuff.
That's
so it's
right.
Hard it's, to detect.
That's undetectable at that point because it's your own body creating what's necessary to improve your performance. With that in mind, this is what I want to know. Isn't that just called a fair advantage? Why not allow everyone to do something like that?
There are some improvements. There's another issue here, which I want to compare the athletes of today to the athletes of yesterday, right? There's some of this notion of is Babe Ruth better than Barry Bonds? But Barry Bonds, gee, he was steroidal. He had a head the size of a pumpkin.
Right.
Is that fair? On the other hand, we kind of know that Babe Ruth, I think, did pretty well at the bar. So, you know, everybody has their issues. But the idea being baseball cares about its history, its comparative statistics.
Okay.
You said at the beginning, I don't care what they're taking. If they jump as high as possible, I'm loving it. Well, some people like wrestling, pro wrestling. It becomes an exhibition at some point if the competition is about who's got the best pharmacist. Mm. But what we really have to think hard about is, do we want to do things that encourage dangerous behavior? That should be one standard, particularly in kids who emulate what the adults do.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do things that make the sports so distorted, people pole vaulting 50 feet, that, you know, it's just an exhibition now. It's like some crazy steroidal weightlifting contest. Yeah, right. You can do it, but it's not a sport anymore. Mm-hmm. And then, are we going to make sure that everybody has a chance to do it? Even things like sleeping in those oxygen chambers, the tents that athletes use.
Yeah.
You know, Brazil uses them. Argentina uses them. They play these poor countries. They can't afford that technology.
Right.
So they do better. I don't like that in my sports. I like it at least when what we try for is a level playing field. Mm. Performance enhancement undercuts that. Last point quick. You know, some of those bikes had tiny motors buried in them, right?
It wasn't some of them have been found to carry motors in them. Yes, so that's technical doping. It's bike doping rather than the cyclist.
So I don't like that. Again, it's like you got a real advantage here. You're cheating. You're not transparent about it.
Hmm.
So another aspect of this drug issue or whatever the technology is you got to be open about it. If you're hiding it, That's trouble.
And now, listen, I'm with you on that. And listen, that last example is clearly, I mean, that's the kind of assistance that you can't have. That is clearly cheating. That'd be like finding out that, Michael Phelps had a propeller for a penis. I mean, it's not cool. Okay. We just know
that's that image.
we just know that that's not cool.
People did say he had big hands, and we know what Donald Trump was
doing. Don't encourage him, doctor, please. And I'm with you about the genetic doping. That is the scary thing. I'm totally for it.
I am so for genetic doping. Here's the way I feel. There's already genetic doping. It happened in your lineage. Two people got together somewhere in the past, and they passed down those genes to you. Mm-hmm. Those genes came together in a certain combination that made you a phenom. That is genetic doping through natural selection, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll tell you why you won't like this. One of the dirty secrets of science when it starts to look at sports is you're right. We're not rooting for effort. We're not rooting for training. We're rooting for subtle genetic differences. It's great that, sprinter A goes faster than B, but it's probably mainly because of some biological difference in their muscle makeup. I kind of like to think they're trying harder. They trained harder. Sports is all about virtues. We like to see the ethics on display there. But if you're right, and I think you are, genetics plays a key role in who can do what, and it may undercut our admiration for athletes if we start to think, hey, we're just rooting for the biologically lucky.
But see, the thing is, this becomes a geographical disposition. So you can find gene variants in certain parts of West Africa and the Caribbean that are extra fast twitch and are naturally occurring.
The thing that would
just really kind of destroy me would be if all of a sudden I turned up, stuck a syringe in a guy and gave him that gene variant, and off he goes at 3,000 miles an hour. That's really going to be a problem. Now, there is one proposed solution that everybody gets a genome passport, a biological passport with all of their coding on it. Mm-hmm. And then if all of a sudden I come along and stick that syringe in somebody's thigh.
Yeah, you'll see the mutation.
That change in their passport occurs. Are we close to that, or is that just me
with
fantasy?
It's a great idea. It's probably the way to monitor genetic engineering in the future, but we're not there yet. There are so many small changes we don't understand that we can't really build that passport. Maybe 20 years? Today.
Well, I have to say that the one thing that I agree with you on and that you have made a very cogent case for is the future of any sport in young people. And so that creates definitely a rift within my reasoning because I have no answer for that whatsoever. So on that level and that level alone, I'm with you guys. All right. But everything else, screw that. Everything else, I'm like, screw that, man. So
back to the rock star. Dr. Arthur Kaplan, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. Dr. Arthur Kaplan, Director of Medical Ethics at NYU and author of The Ethics of Sport. Make sure you check that book out. So, well, that's our show.
There it is.
Yeah, thanks to our guests. And we mustn't forget,
of course, none other than Lance Armstrong himself and the man, the myth, and not the legend. Mm. Oh, no, the man, the legend, and not the myth, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
So Chuck's mind's been changed. I wonder if yours has regards doping. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
I'm Chuck Nice.
And this has been Playing With Science. You know what we're going to say next. See you all soon.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.